Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by the great Paul Breddle. Before we get there, I wanted to thank you for taking some time out of your day to join us here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Also on YouTube, make sure you're signing up for those notifications. Hit the little bell and make sure you get notified every time there's a new episode. And if you're on an audio channel, make sure you're getting those automatic downloads as well. Those help the channel a ton. And if you have some time left over, make sure you tell a friend about the show also. We appreciate you taking some time out of your day to join us. It is greatly, greatly appreciated. Before we get into the show, we do have some interesting games set up for Sunday in the NFC North. Of course, the international window, Minnesota still overseas. They're going to face Cleveland in, I believe it's London. So that should be a fun international game. Excited to see how Minnesota responds from a week ago. Can Cleveland get that defense back going? That should be a fun one to keep an eye on in the early morning games. Then on 3:25, it is Lions and Bengals. Not exactly expecting much from that one. Lions should boat race this Cincinnati team, but it does give you an opportunity to cheer against the Lions, and it gives you an opportunity to keep an eye on the Cincinnati Bengals, who Green Bay faces in week six in Green Bay, coming off the bye week. So a couple things to keep an eye on for your Sunday as we get ready for week five football without the Green Bay Packers, as they have their bye week, of course, this week. Now, without any further ado, let's get into our wonderful conversation with the fantastic Paul Breddle. All right, we're being joined now by the one and only Paul Breddle. You can find him on social media at @Paul_Breddle. Always great catching up with you, Paul, and just kind of figuring out the pulse of this team as you cover this team better than anyone over at the Wisconsin State Journal. Before we jump into all of the chaos that is currently surrounding the Green Bay Packers, at least it feels like, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm excellent, Andy. And it's only a month into the season, but we've had a wide variety of kind of topics and feelings, emotions to discuss in our short time together this season.
It certainly hasn't been boring. I'll put it that way. There's definitely been plenty to discuss, plenty to dissect and dive into, and we're going to get through all of that today. Before we jump into anything else, I know this is airing a little bit later in the week, but I still just kind of want to get your overall feel for Packers, Cowboys, what kind of happened in that game, and what really was a epic 40-40 game, even if in the moment we couldn't totally enjoy it because of the chaos of everything going on.
Yeah, I'm going to focus on the defense because, look, we knew that Cowboys offense could put up points. They've done that this season, but no CeeDee Lamb, down two starting offense alignment, and then just the way the Packers defense had operated through the first 3 weeks, I didn't see 40 points in that game coming. And in part, we always have to remember to credit the other team. I mean, Dak Prescott, especially when under pressure in that game, was terrific. Just how he navigated the pocket, knowing where to go with the football, getting it out on time, knowing where his outlet options are, just his response to when there was some pressure was terrific. And obviously it made the challenge of slowing that Cowboys offense much greater. But then from a coverage standpoint, I mean, maybe I was being a prisoner of the moment to a degree, but this feels like one, maybe the first or only game where the Jeff Hafley defense just felt like there were no answers, right, for what Dallas was doing. I mean, the receivers were able to find kind of the soft spots. They were able to set up these catch and run opportunities. And I think, again, credit to Dallas as well for sticking with the running game. There individually, there wasn't this huge performance. There weren't these, you know, monster runs taking place. But I believe they ran the ball 26 times in that game. And the effect of that is it keeps the Packers defense honest in that regard, in terms of having to be mindful of it, play the run, put some guys closer to line of scrimmage, right? We saw some, I believe, five down linemen fronts from the Packers. And again, that's going to impact your secondary then, right? Who's now on more of an island as you defend the run. So just a well put together game plan by the Dallas Cowboys. And like I said, it was a uncharacteristic place to see this Packers defense under Jeff Hafley, where just didn't feel like there was any answers, because it's not just the 40 points that the Dallas Cowboys put up. And I don't mean to say just, because that is obviously a lot, but it's how they did it. Just there was little resistance from the Green Bay Packers, and Dallas just consistently plotting the ball down the field, little resistance from Green Bay, and a lot of points given up.
I want to go back to a play that we've all discussed in pretty great length that was a game-changing play in this game, which was the fumble before halftime, the decision to go for it there. We, of course, Paul, do not know how things would have changed if that fumble doesn't take place. But let's just say the start of the second half goes the exact same way, right? Green Bay would have been up, theoretically, 13-9 at that standpoint in halftime, going into halftime, if they just kind of run out the clock rather than trying to get something down the field and have the fumble and then the touchdown for Dallas. They would have been up 13-9. They hold Dallas 5 plays, 9 yards to start the third quarter and get the punt, and then they go 9 plays, 76 yards to make it to get them to 20 points. At that point, it's 20-9 Green Bay, and I just wonder at that point, is Dallas maybe not doing the run as much, maybe trying to throw to get into it a little bit more, maybe being a bit more predictable? And then does Green Bay's confusing, swarming defense that we've seen the first few games really take over from that point forward? Because I just went through and graded everything on defense, and I'm watching this defense closely. And yes, I didn't think, like, you know, guys like Rashawn Gary and LVN were as effective as kind of the second and third rushers. Losing Devontae Wyatt, I thought, really hurt a lot in this game. And I'll also add, I didn't think that there were moments where the corners, I thought, looked same as they had over the first few games, but there were plays with especially Valentine and Hobbs where they just allowed far too easy completions on a few different scenarios. But I do wonder if you don't have that swing before halftime, and if you can get that, you know, 11-point lead in the second half, if you are able to kind of get into a little bit more of your swarming defense that we've seen, and maybe just everything changes. But it didn't go that way. And to your point, credit Dallas's offense quite a bit.
Yeah, I just want to touch on Devontae Wyatt, like you mentioned. That was so massive, I think, in just kind of how things ended up playing out. And I mean, for one, Wyatt on his own, he's been one of the most disruptive defensive tackles in football through the first three games of the season. So now that element, that production is now gone. And now everyone else has to step into these larger roles. I mean, Nazir Stackhouse, credit to him, obviously, for being a UDFA, making his way onto the 53-man roster, but that's still a rookie who's now playing 30-plus snaps, a rookie who's primarily a run defender, now out there in a lot of passing situations, asked to get after the quarterback. Kobe Wooden, more of a run defender, have to rely on him more. Carl Brooks has obviously made very good strides during his NFL career, but he's not Devontae Wyatt, right? So I think that there was a big trickle-down from that. And Micah Parsons, in his post-game press conference when speaking with the media, he even talked about how not having Wyatt out there, just the impact that that had. And when it comes to overall defensive performance, a strong push up the middle, best way to wreck any play. So if you're not generating that, there's a trickle-down effect that impacts the rest of the defense.
It really does. And, you know, all of a sudden, a three-man defensive tackle rotation in and of itself, almost regardless of who's out there, gets really thin really fast. And you could see those guys wear down through the course of the game as well. And I think if anyone would have said, you know, going into the season, you have a three-man defensive tackle rotation of Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, and Nasir Stackhouse, I think anyone would have been like, ooh, like, that's probably not great. And I thought that actually, for the most part, they held up about as well as could possibly be expected. But that loss of Devontae Wyatt, massive in this game. As we kind of separate from Packers, Cowboys, and look a little bit closer at this team through week 4, as they're 2-1-1, because of course they are, after beating the two arguably best teams on their schedule, losing to arguably the worst team on the schedule and tying whatever the Dallas Cowboys are. How do you view this team in totality, and where are they at through 4 weeks going into this bye?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question right now, luck. Isn't Good it? Luck, Paul. I think I view this from, you know, the NFL regular season. If it was a book, it's 18 chapters. We're in chapter 4 right now, going into chapter 5. Like, there is still a long ways to go. And I know I've mentioned this before, but it's who you are come January, not who you are today, is going to ultimately determine what your fate is when it comes to playoffs and anything like that. Obviously, you want to get wins now to put yourself in the best position, but that building process is what's going to be important moving forward, and learning from the mistakes, the miscues that have taken place up to this point is what this Packers team has to do right now. But overall, I mean, I would still, again, be bullish on who this Packers team is. We've seen how good the defensive performance can be. And I know it's overshadowed because it was a tie and just that end of overtime sequence, but the offense put up 40 points in this game. Like,
yeah,
they played really good football in this contest. And even though their back was often against the wall because they had to respond to what the Dallas offense did, they were able to do so. So you see the, as we know, we knew coming into the season, obviously this is a talented team, and you see all that taking place in these first four games. Now it's just about harnessing it and cleaning up the little things, which in the grand scheme of a football season, what your football team looks like, I mean, that should be the part of this equation that feels the most doable, right? Like cleaning up your own mistakes. Because again, like I said, you credit the Browns, their defense, you credit the Cowboys, their offense. But the last two games, Packers' biggest enemy has been the Green Bay Packers. So yeah. I guess I would take some, maybe confidence is the wrong word, but some confidence in their ability to overcome that. Because again, we see the offense being able to put up points. Going back to Washington, Detroit, we see them jumping out to fast starts, which is crucial. We've obviously seen the defense play at a really, really high level. And I think the turnover component of it, which has been lacking, is going to come.
Yeah.
Jeff Hafley talked about before the Cowboys game, they chart every single attempt that a player makes on the football, a Packers defender, and then every opportunity where they should have made an attempt and they didn't. And he said, compared to a year ago, they are going after the ball so much more. And that, to me, if you do that consistently, that feels like one of those things where eventually water is going to find its level, right? Things are going to balance out. Some fumbles will start to come the Packers way. And then Hafley also mentioned in regards to their turnovers, Xavier McKinney's presence in the middle. I mean, that takes away so many of those, you know, the quarterback's willingness, I should say, to throw the ball in that direction or maybe to parts of the field where he's lingering. So maybe there just aren't as many interception opportunities for this Packers defense, again, because of who McKinney is and just what he does on that back end. So, but it feels like turnovers to me is consistency, right? Are you putting yourself consistently in a position to have those opportunities and then capitalizing on it? And I think this Packers defense is, and I think that'll come as well.
I think so too. I think it's one of the things that's been absolutely missing has been the turnovers. And I talked about it a couple of times this week already of like, I'm really excited about the fact that those, I know those turnovers are going to come at some point, and the fact that they haven't yet. And it, hopefully when it's needed most, that those will come in bunches, which they usually tend to do. I just think it changes everything where the offense is set in much more favorable down and distance situations, or maybe even they're housing some of those turnovers for touchdowns. And then you're just getting off the field easier without having to get three and outs and those sort of things. So I absolutely think that that's going to be something that really propels this team once those turnovers start to come. And I do believe that they very much will. The one thing that I have that I'm just disappointed on through 4 weeks is the, like, it's one thing to make the mistakes. It's another to learn from them. And like, I think the field goal block is a great example of it's one thing. It shouldn't happen in the first place, especially in a situation where you have a game winning kick opportunity, but then, all right, we got to shore it up. We have to learn from it. And then the very next week, you immediately allow a field goal block or an extra point block return for 2 points in a major game changing moment in that game as well. I just want to see the proof that, hey, the mistakes are going to happen. That's, again, to your point, it's an 18 chapter book and you're going to have to learn some things through the course of it. That's fine. But the biggest thing is you actually learn from it and make the corrections. The fact that they didn't, or at least not well enough in that situation, that's to me what is a little concerning through 4 weeks, but a lot of ball game left. And hopefully on this bye week, they're able to clean up some of the mistakes that they have hopefully learned from through the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I do this article each week previewing the game of kind of my three things. And going into the Dallas game, one of those points was, is a week, 3 days worth of practices enough to clean up not just the special teams, but the pre-snap operation as well? I mean, the false start penalties, not as bad as it was in Cleveland, but there were still a few of those. I mean, the pre-snap operation at the end of the overtime sequence there was obviously something that was a big factor in this game as well. So to your point, I think for me, looking back on their performance against Dallas, that was one of the more honestly discouraging aspects of it, is that these major blunders from a week ago that determine the outcome of a game maybe not quite to the same extent, but we're still very much there. And again, it's 3 days of practices. In the grand scheme, again, not a ton of time, but you would just hope with something that just played such a heavy role in determining week three that that would be, all right, we are not going to let this stuff be the reason we might lose, but it's not going to be because of these things. And they were still prevalent.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it is good to be right. Now, Green Bay has a bye in week 5, which is why it's even more thrilling to get in on all the action on Prize Picks. With no home team to cheer for, it's always more exciting when you're cheering on some of your favorite players in Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Jahmyr Gibbs to have a big game in Cincinnati, Derrick Henry to have a monster game on the ground against Houston, and Danny Dimes to bounce back big and get a win against Las Vegas. Now, here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Josh Allen's passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget to use that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Sports are all about competition. Every snap, every possession, every clutch moment matters. That same energy is what 1v1 me brings to video games. Every single day, you can watch and stake on matchups in Madden, NBA 2K, FC, and Call of Duty Search and Destroy. All the games are streamed live, every match has refs, and payouts are instant. And these aren't just random online lobbies. These are the best players in the scene, pros, streamers, and rivals, with season playoffs and the championship game on the line. Every game matters. Over 100 million has already been paid out on the app, and the community is growing fast. If you're a sports fan, a gamer, or just someone who loves having a little extra on the line, 1v1me is where you need to be. It's not just about winning. It's about the bragging rights, too. Every match has a chat going crazy, and you can back your pick in real time. Download today and use code PACKADAY. Your first stake on the app is risk-free. That's code PACKADAY for a risk-free first stake. Do not miss this opportunity.
No, they certainly were. So hopefully they can fix that moving forward. I want to get to kind of our main topic, which is going to be our Packers bye week stock report. So I've got a variety of different topics. And Paul, your choices are to buy, sell, or if you already have stock in it, you can just retain your stock. Okay. Maybe it's not the right time to buy or additional or sell it. So I'll let you go in any direction that you want. We'll go through these kind of lightning round. But I'm going to start with a simple one. We'll go easy and we'll get kind of all over the place as we go through this. But the Micah Parsons trade through 4 weeks, you buying or selling what Green Bay did with that trade?
Buying it, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, his impact can't be overstated. I mean, you can go to Pro Football Focus and look up pressures. I think he's either at the top of the NFL or very close to it. So that in itself, I think, justifies the deal. But then just his impact. I mean, Rashawn Gary, I don't know what the standings are right now, but he went into week 4 leading the NFL in sacks. We talked about Devontae Wyatt's impact. I mean, like we said last week, you credit those players for winning their matchups, taking advantage of the situations in front of them, but there's a Micah Parsons effect that's taken place with that as well.
No, there really is. I'm 1,000,000% buying it. I think it could not have been better. And I think there's still some thought of like, well, Micah, even in the Monday Night Football game, I think Aikman and Joe Buck were talking about like, oh, the Cowboys held Micah in check. And it's like, he didn't have like the huge sack numbers or like a big explosive play, but like PFF credited him with 10 pressures in that game. He was all over the place. He was unblockable. Brandon Thorne, who studies linemen better than anybody, said that he was about halfway through all of the tape and said that Micah Parsons at that point was the most impactful player of the week for him. Like he was still massive in that game, despite maybe not showing up a ton in the box score. But that the sack he had probably saved a touchdown and maybe even the game in overtime. So now he's been phenomenal. I could not be more impressed with what he's brought to this team so far. All right, on the same defensive side of things, are you buying or selling the Packers as a top tier defense?
Top tier. For me, top tier, we're going top 5, top 10. I think that they can still and are that. I do. I think again, it's a long NFL season. There's going to be some performances that aren't great, and this was obviously one of them. But you look at the overall body of work and the pass rush's ability to get after the quarterback. We talked about how expect the turnovers to start coming in. And obviously that's going to greatly dictate things as well. So and then Jeff Hafley's ability as a game planner, defensive play caller, like McKinney on the back end. I mean, there's just so much talent, the linebackers, so much talent, versatility on that defense, and Jeff Hafley's ability to maximize those players and put them in a position to be successful. I still fully believe in this defense having the ability to be a top tier unit this season.
After a 40-point performance, stock, you know, prices went down this week. Mm-hmm. I am buying all of the Packers 100%. Defensive stock that I can possibly buy with it being at a lower price. I was actually super encouraged going through and watching every snap on defense this week. And I was kind of expecting to be like, all right, Dallas found some holes in the machine and figured out ways to attack it. And, you know, Green Bay, maybe their effort wasn't the same or anything like that. I really didn't. I thought they did a lot of the same things that worked in previous weeks. And they were just like a hair off on so many different occasions. Like Mike almost had like 7 sacks mm-hmm. in this game. And it was just like a millisecond Dak got rid of the ball and the ball out of his hands. Every single time that they got pressure, it just felt like there was one release valve for Dallas and Dak found it every single time. Mm-hmm. And every single time they had great coverage, it just felt like the pressure just couldn't quite get there. And it gave the receivers just a little bit more time to get open. I didn't see any fatal flaw from this defense at all in that game, despite giving up 40 points. I am tipping my cap a lot to Dak Prescott in this one. Now they're going to face really good quarterbacks, you know, down the road in the playoffs, etc. So it's not a complete excuse or whatever, but I didn't see anything that gave me any long-term concern. And going back to the turnovers, those are going to come eventually. And I think that's really going to help this defense too. So I am buying all the defensive stock that I can right now. I'd stay on the defensive side of the ball. I want to go over the depth of a couple of positions. So first mm-hmm. of all, defensive line depth, more specifically interior defensive line depth. I don't know exactly how to phrase this, but are you buying that they have enough depth on the interior of the defensive line? I will note we are recording this on Tuesday prior to Matt LaFleur speaking. This is airing probably on Saturday. We have not heard any update on Devontae Wyatt as of recording this. So just for those at home, we don't know if it's a non-issue, a huge issue, something in between, but let's just say Devontae is healthy. Are you buying the depth or selling the depth?
I'm holding. Okay. If Devontae, that decision hinges on Devontae Wyatt, right?
Sure.
Because we just talked about his impact, his ability, and if he's out there, and Carl Brooks is your second pass rusher, you know, they like what they have in Kobe Wood, and you have Stackhouse and more just run specific situations. And then you have the versatility of defensive end too, right? Van Ness being able to take some snaps inside in those situations. I do like that group, and we've seen the play from them these first few games, but without Wyatt, you know, you start to, as we mentioned at the start of this, you wonder kind of who can then step in and fill those roles. I mean, Warren Brinson has been a healthy scratch up to this point in the season, I think each week.
Yep.
So just kind of an unknown at this point in terms of what he can provide this group. Stackhouse wouldn't be more run defense guys. So that's a lot of pass rushing burden that's now on the shoulders. If, you know, depending on what Wyatt's status is, of Carl Brooks and Warren Brinson to help pick up that slack. So I'm going to hold right now.
I think I am buying a defensive tackle at the trade deadline is what I like. And what I'll say here is I don't think it needs to be anything like a top tier defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. I just think they're like a number four defensive tackle, like one more rotational piece. I just didn't see enough from Stackhouse. And if they believe that Brinson is not ready to that point yet, where again, he's a healthy scratch every week, that to me gives you basically three defensive tackles. You're at Brooks, Wyatt, and Wooden. And I think to me, like, for the most part, and we've seen so far, that's probably good enough game in and game out mm-hmm. if all three of those are healthy. But as soon as one of those guys goes down, and even if it's Brooks or Wooden, I still feel like they are short along the defensive line. So I don't think it's anything urgent. I don't think it's anything they need right now. But if I'm Green Bay, I'm at least monitoring the market and saying, you know, just one more piece to rotate in there that's better than Brinson or Stackhouse and that you feel comfortable with, I would feel a lot better about maybe a reunion with like a TJ Slayton as a fourth guy. I'm sure Cincinnati is probably not going to need him a ton if their season continues on its trajectory. I don't know that I even love that, but something in that realm of like, it's not the number one defensive tackle, mm-hmm. but a nice solid number four. I want to ask the same question on the cornerback side of things, because I think maybe there's some concern following this week of Hobbs and Valentine, maybe not, you know, being as good as they were. At least Valentine was in the first few weeks. Where are you at with the cornerback depth, and are you buying or selling?
That's a great question. again, I'm gonna go hold on this one. And the reason that I go that route is because for this Packers defense to reach its ceiling, you're going to need Nate Hobbs to be the player that the Packers think he can be when they signed him back in March. Because Keyshawn Nixon, to his credit, I mean, he has played good football at this first month of the season. And so if Hobbs can provide that presence alongside of him, and then Carrington Valentine is your number three, I mean, that's a strong trio that you have. I think, of course, as we've had going back to the summer, the depth behind that, you're obviously going to still have questions on. So bolstering that element of it, I think, is always going to be a part of the conversation this season, just because Kamal Haddon's been a healthy scratch. Bo Melton's converted from a wide receiver. There's just those question marks there. But that trio, I would still, or Valentine and Hobbs specifically, I would still hold right now. And like I said, those two, specifically Hobbs, I think determines the ceiling for that cornerback position, and part therefore the cornerback room. So you need to go through these growing pains, for lack of a better term, over this next month. Because remember, he missed almost all of training camp, getting acclimated to a new defense. He had to hit the ground running in the middle or during regular season weeks in preparation. So there's some, you know, you give him that leniency, right, to get caught back up to speed. But ultimately, you want Nate Hobbs to be that guy for you. You have to figure that out now, during this portion of the season, if he can be that guy for you down the stretch. Because there's still so much learning that's taking place right now from the coaches, the players, and not just the Packers. This is across the NFL that's taking place during this first 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season. So right now, you hold, you stick with that, with Hobbs, Valentine's combo, however you see fit, if it's matchup-based, whatever might need to take place, and you see, all right, can these guys be the ones that we lean on come December and January?
I'm with you. I'm holding, and I will just also add, I really like the way that Javon Bullard is playing football, and I think he's adding a lot to that secondary as well in that slot position. So I'm holding. I think they'll get better, and I really like the way that Keyshawn Nixon is playing as well. So don't necessarily think it's a ceiling raiser, it's something that's going to define your team in this cornerback group, good or bad, but I think they're good enough, especially if that pressure continues up front. I'm with you. I'm holding in this situation. All right. The big one that we got to discuss, special teams. Are you buying or selling the Packers special teams?
I mean, at this point in the season, given what we've seen so far, you know, I think the choice would be to sell. The reason I'm a little hesitant on that is because, for as bad as things have been in these two games, I don't think that's who they are, if that makes sense, right? Those issues are something that they are going to have to overcome this season, and they have to, you know, they're past the point of getting the benefit of the doubt and saying they'll figure this out, right? Like, I think, you know, the defense, right? They gave up the 40 points, the offense the week prior. I guess, at least for me, I'll obviously speak for myself. There's this thought of that they'll get past this. They'll figure this out. This was a bump in the road. It's a learning curve. I don't know that we have that feeling with the special teams unit. I think where I'm at with them is just, you hope that they can at least just provide you some stability. You're not expecting, obviously, any sort of game altering plays in a positive perspective from this group, but just don't do it on the negative end like they've been doing up to this point. So I think that things get worked out, and I know nobody wants to hear this, but Rich Bisaccia has talked about how there's a lot of young players in some key positions on that special teams unit, and that there are some growing pains that are going through. And that doesn't justify what the product has been on the field, but we can't also not mention that either when just discussing that unit as well, because it is a part of the equation. Now, does that mean those plays should happen? Of course not, but it's a part of the equation, something the Packers are working through. And I think if you're holding on to some form of hope of, all right, can we get past this point? It's that as they get more practice reps, more in-game experience, you see the play from that group at least start to stabilize somewhat.
I am not touching penny stocks for the Packers special teams. I actually have some stuff. I put it out on the curb, and it's just a big cardboard sign that said free. Just please take it from me. I don't even want to be associated with it. I'm actually with you for the most part. Like, I feel like I trust McManus. I trust Waylon when he's out there. I actually think that they've got the key pieces in place. Like, I like Zane Anderson, Bo Melton. Neiman has been a really fun addition on special teams as well. He's been good. Like, I look at the pieces of this and I'm like, this just should work. It shouldn't be this bad. I don't even care. I'm selling all special teams stock for the rest of my life and not touching any more of it. You can't get me to buy it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Five, six, 7 years ago, like the early part of Gutekunst's tenure, when there were these special teams miscues, if special teams had, from a roster building standpoint, that was a backseat priority, right? Yeah. But when Bisaccia was hired, that all started to change, right? Like, there were specific special teams additions that were made in free agency, that were made in the summer, right? Where this player is brought on, like a prime example right now is Nick Neiman, right? Or I think even when Keyshawn Nixon was originally signed, right? Like, that was kind of his role, his niche, yeah, where it's like, this is what he's going to do. This is how he's going to help our team. So like you said, you go through that group and you're like, man, feels like the pieces of the puzzle are there, but whatever is transpiring in practice, film room, all that, it's just not carrying over consistently enough.
Not translating enough for sure. Hopefully they can get that fixed. I don't expect it, but I'm hoping for the best. Jordan Love, buying or selling 4 weeks into the season?
Buying. I think his overall body of work has been, I think, very, very good this season. In that Dallas game, like I said, his ability to orchestrate those drives, because again, their back was against the wall. There's the overtime drive getting down the field, end of the twice in the fourth quarter, right? Overcoming the defense giving up points. So it's not just the numbers that he put up. It's not just that he was efficient in that game, but it was doing it in those gotta have it moments where plays need to be made. Now, there's still improvements, right? The decision making, I think, is kind of the biggest thing right now for me in terms of, all right, where do we need to see Jordan Love take that next step this season? We can look at the interception that he threw against Cleveland. We can look at the throw to Emmanuel Wilson in the flat, just given the circumstances, no timeouts, 28 seconds left on the clock. So for me, that's the big thing. But in terms of his operation of the offense, just how he's looking in the pocket, his overall efficiency, things like that, I mean, I'm buying what Jordan Love has shown so far.
Yeah, 1,000,000% buying. Extremely pleased with where he's at. And still think there's, again, some opportunities for growth here and there, but I don't know how you could be too disappointed with the way that he's played through the first 4 weeks of the season, to say the least. We'll be right back. Hey friends, football season is here, and that means you're going to want to have a VPN set up to make sure that you are ready to watch the right sporting events that aren't always available in your region. I'll be honest with you guys, a few years ago, I didn't even know what a VPN was. Now, I use my VPN daily for a variety of different reasons, including protecting my private data, changing my browsing location, and having the best premium cybersecurity at all times. And that's why I use NordVPN. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, which means no buffering or lagging while streaming. Plus, world-class cybersecurity, the ability to utilize it on up to 10 different devices, and a VPN that I know is going to work every single time. There's simply no better choice than NordVPN. So here's what you need to do. Go to nordvpn.com/packer to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan. That link, nordvpn.com/packer, will also give you 4 extra months on their 2-year plan. There's zero risk with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description. So what are you waiting for? Go to nordvpn.com/packer today and get NordVPN right now. Packers offensive line, buying or selling?
Goodness. I'm in a hold right now.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is just because of the injuries. That makes it too difficult, right, to just evaluate, all right, who is this group? Who can this group be? And also when it comes to offensive line play, I mean, the Packers as an organization, they figure that part of it out. And so you lean on those past experiences, getting Zach Tom back, hopefully getting Aaron Banks back in the mix to help provide kind of that stabilizing presence to the offense. Because I think we talked about the run game last week. Just having that element to lean on, I think, can just it can be a superpower for this offense and just helping it get to the next level. Not just because you're not in down and distance, long down and distance situations as much anymore, but the LaFleur offense, those running concepts, passing games concepts, how they marry together, work together. I mean, if you get the run game going, that just elevates the passing game component of it too, and can just take this unit to another level. So I'll hold right now. I guess if to go one way or the other, I'd lean towards buying. Just, you know, we're buying low right now, right? Just because there's injuries, things haven't gone as you would hope to the start to the season, but you get healthy, you trust that the Packers can put out a stout offensive line unit, which they typically do. Then that can help unlock the rest, you know, the rest of this offense.
I'm actually going to sell on this one. I'm going to start by saying, I think they're going to be fine overall. I'm going to sell them as a offensive line that is maybe like a force multiplier, is like a top tier offensive line. I just had a lot of hopes for this line going into the season. And I just think Rashid is struggling right now. Banks, even when he's been in there, I think a lot of it's been due to just health and injuries too, but I haven't been super impressed with him. Elton Jenkins has been massively disappointing at center so far, way worse than I ever would have expected that to look. I think Ryan's been fine. You know, Zach Tom being hurt, once he gets back in, he'll be great. I don't have any concerns about that. And then just like Jordan Morgan, Anthony Belton, I was just maybe hoping for a little bit more, although I did think Morgan for the most part bounced back this week. I don't know. I have concerns at the moment. I think if I were to lean one way, I would say sell, but I do think they're going to be fine, figure it out. We usually kind of go through this where the offensive line starts a little shaky and then you have a couple injuries and then things kind of settle in and everything feels fine. Even this week, right? I didn't think it was great, but it was totally fine. They put up 40 points with that offensive line, despite it being completely obliterated. So I think they'll be fine, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards sell on this one at the moment, just as like a top tier line. All right, two more quick ones before we get out of here. All right. Packers fans want to know, Matt LaFleur, buy or sell?
I'm buying Matt LaFleur. I think, again, you look at, there's the decision making, right? We can look at the end of half situation against Dallas. The final drive in overtime. I mean, we're all going to focus on those final few plays, but the lack of urgency throughout that possession, right, was the head scratching watching it unfold in real time. You either felt like, if you didn't have the scoreboard up on the TV, you would have thought, oh, there's 10 minutes left, or they're tied and only need a field goal, like just from how they were kind of plotting their way down the field. So again, there's things that obviously need to be focused on, the pre-snap operation, penalties, but this offense, again, they put up 40 points in this game. Him as the play caller, him as orchestrating that game plan. The players obviously go out and execute. But yeah, so I'm going to buy Matt LaFleur moving forward.
I'm going to hold. I think the fire Matt LaFleur stuff is beyond ridiculous. I do think there's some things that he needs to clean up. I think just figuring out the identity. I think there hasn't been a rhyme or reason of when you're going to be aggressive and when you're going to be more conservative. I feel like those decisions have been wrong too many times. Some of the challenges, just some of that stuff I do think needs to get cleaned up. I still think he's the right guy for the job. I still think he's a really, really, really good head coach. But if you want to be a great coach, if you want to be a Super Bowl winning coach, I think there's going to be some things that he's got to clean up on his side. So I'm maintaining my stock. I have a lot of it already. Certainly not selling, but I don't think I need any more at the moment either. I just want to see a little bit of improvement before I want to purchase any more at the moment. And then last but not least, Packers as Super Bowl contenders, are you buying or selling or holding?
I still believe that they are Super Bowl contenders. And that's why, so I guess would that put me in the hold category then?
Probably.
So yeah, the hold category, because I still firmly believe that they, again, we've talked about all the reasons defensively, offensively, why they can go out and win games. They've done so already against two of the NFC's best. I think the difference between being in the hold versus the buy category is also what we talked about, is just those mistakes. And not that I don't believe they can get cleaned up, but we just need to see it happen first before that happens, right? I think had they gone from Cleveland to Dallas, the special teams miscues don't happen. There's fewer penalties. You don't have those kind of questionable pre-snap operation elements, and you see that progress from one week to the next. I think right now I'd be sitting here saying bye, right? Because and if they came out of that game with a win, not just because of the 3-1 record versus 2-1-1, but how they would have done it. Had it had been a cleaner operation, had they shown, yep, these were issues last week, we cleaned them up in a week, for the most part, taken care of. We went out there and executed, came away with the win. So that's the part of it that I want to see. And I still think that that's what we're going to see as the season progresses. But for now, it's I want to see it take place, right?
Yeah, I'm there with you. I'm holding. I do think this is a Super Bowl contending team. What I will say is this 4 weeks is almost like a fun little glimpse of, you know, kind of like almost like a playoff run. And remember, unless they get that first round bye, they're probably going to have to go 4-0 in the playoffs to win a Super Bowl, right? So the wild card division, championship game, and then Super Bowl to win. And in that sort of run, you're going to see two really good teams like Washington when they have their starting quarterback. I know they've struggled without Jaden Daniels a little bit this past week, but when they have their starting quarterback, which they did against Green Bay, and like Detroit, those are two playoff contenders that you beat in what felt like big fight playoff type feels. You beat both of them. You're going to see top tier offenses like Dallas. You're going to see top tier defenses like Cleveland, and then probably better overall teams than either of those. But that's what you need to navigate over a 4 week period of time. And you need to go 4-0 during that 4-game stretch. And we saw signs over that 4-game stretch that they can put up 40 points, that they can hang with some of the NFL's best like Detroit and Washington, that they can get into defensive battles and hold teams to 13 points, 16 points, et cetera. So I think all the signs are there, but consistency is still the answer to this, where you got to do it through a 4-game stretch. We got our first 4-game stretch of the season in the first quarter. And I would say probably if you're doing pass fail, it probably gets a little bit closer to the fail side, losing and tying those final two games. But now they get a next four, another quarter of the season. I'm excited. I think there's some very winnable games in this quarter of the season. Let's see how they respond to that. And let's see if they can grow and become the team that we think they can become. I'm still there, though. I don't know if I need to buy, because I totally bought in hook, line, and sinker that they are Super Bowl contenders. I still believe it, Paul. So I'm with you. I'm holding my stock there.
Yeah, obviously Packers want to be 4-0 right now. Fans want the Packers to be 4-0 right now. But I know I've maintained this stance before. I don't think, especially in September, that it's a bad thing to have some mistakes, to get punched in the mouth a little bit, to have a bad taste after coming out of a game, because those potential learning opportunities, that adversity, it's better to go through it now than in December and be trying to figure this stuff out on the fly going into the postseason, which is kind of what was happening last year as the offense was sputtering down the stretch and you're trying to figure it out. Now you're in the most important games of the season. So, but again, making that come to fruition is about how do you respond? Do you learn from it? Taking it from the practice field to Sundays.
No, I'm totally with you. We're, I think, very much in lockstep and on the same page on that one. Hopefully this team becomes exactly what they want them to become. A lot of season left, and hopefully they make any of those corrections needed over the course of this bye week. Paul, I cannot thank you enough. Where can we find all your wonderful work?
I appreciate it, Andy. Find my written work at the Wisconsin State Journal. Find me in the ESPN Lacrosse Radio Waves Weekly Sports Lead Monday through Friday, 3-6.
Yeah, check out him with John Papadopoulos and ESPN Lacrosse. And then again, Wisconsin State Journal, must follow stuff if you're a Packer fan, which you're here, so I know you are. Follow him on social media at Paul_Brettel. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.